pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Good afternoon. My name is David Ledger, reporting today on KFOI Radio's Shasta Environmental Alliance program. This is a weekly program that starts every Friday at 1 p.m. This is the first time the show will be 30 minutes, so today we'll have time to interview Lamone Waite, Shasta College instructor and Master Gardener Coordinator for Shasta County UC Extension Program. The Shasta Environmental Alliance is a nonprofit organization which has 14 supporting groups, and you can see our website at ecoshasta.org. We also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/Shasta Environmental Alliance. Now today, I want to talk to you a little about David Gypsy Chain, who was killed at the age of 24 trying to protect old-growth redwood forests during the redwood summer days in 1998. You might ask, why am I doing this today? And that's because the 20th anniversary memorial service and benefit will be held in Eureka on Sunday, September 16th for the David Gypsy Chain Memorial Scholarship. Noted tree sitter Julia Butterfly Hill will be the program host, and many activists from Redwood Summer Fights of the 1980s and 90s to stop clear cutting of old growth redwoods will be there to speak. For a quick brief background, Pacific Lumber Company was a 140-year-old company, publicly owned and founded in 1863 by the Murphy family. It consisted of 200,000 acres of redwood and Douglas fir forests. The company practiced sustainable logging for many decades, and the Murphy family still had a large but minority interest in the company. The company was debt-free. Unfortunately, Maxim Company of Texas saw that the company's timber holdings were worth more than the company's stock and instituted a hostile takeover financed by junk bonds in 1988. When they took over the company, they also took out $60 million of the company's pension funds. To maximize profits and pay down the debt from junk bonds, Maxim turned the company from one of sustainable logging to very aggressive clear-cutting of old-growth redwood trees. Maxim began to cut down these trees and turn them into lumber as fast as they could with the approval of the always compliant California Department of Forestry, which oversees timber harvest plans on private lands. As environmentalists began to see what was happening, they began protests, legal court battles, and tree sitting made famous by Julia Butterfly, as well as other protesters who would sit in the trees for a number of months sometimes and protect the tree from being cut by loggers. Some of the protests they had during these redwood summers had as many as 3,000 people show up. Amid these protests, anger on both sides grew between Pacific Lumber employees and protesters. Some activists, such as David Gypsy Chain, would go out in the woods and have verbal battles with loggers cutting the old growth. Generally, redwood trees would be cut so that they would fall downhill on this particular parcel. However, in one of these confrontations on September 17, 1998, a logger cut a 135-foot redwood tree so that it fell laterally towards a small group of protesters and crushed the head of David Gypsy Chain, who died at age 24, on the site. The logger who cut the trees was named Arlington Earl Ammons, who claimed he didn't know protesters were nearby. However, Earth First had videotaped the confrontation and claimed Ammons had threatened the protesters. I could not find any videos, but I did listen to the tapes, and it was difficult to discern exactly who was saying what, but you could tell that everyone knew who was present. This fatal confrontation occurred near Grizzly Creek Redwoods State Parks, and that's next to Highway 36 near Fortuna. Following an investigation by the Sheriff's Department, Humboldt County District Attorney Terry Farmer declined to prosecute Mr. Ammons, and stated he might charge the protesters with involuntary manslaughter. Those were the witnesses to this killing. Pacific Lumber claimed that it always used safe logging practices. However, after the death of David Chain, it turned out that Pacific Lumber had at least 250 violations of the California Forest Practices Act between 1995 and 1997, and these violations continued to accumulate in 1998. So in November of that year, Pacific Lumber became the first company ever to lose its logging license in California. This eventually led to the sale of over 7,000 acres of Pacific Lumber old-growth forest to the federal government in 1999 for $380 million. It is managed by the Bureau of Land Management and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and this land is called the Headwaters Forest Preserve. While this deal did provide considerable money to Pacific Lumber, it did put in place strict harvest plans, stopping practices that the Board of Forestry had ignored for over a decade. The company was no longer able to practice its clear-cutting and disregarding forestry regulations. This eventually led to Pacific Lumber Company filing for bankruptcy in 2007. It was unable to pay the interest on its loans. This threatened many of the employees' jobs, their pensions, and local suppliers who were owed money by Maxim. This finally led to a state-sanctioned financial deal whereby Mendocino Redwood Company took over Pacific Lumber from Maxim and promised to promote sustainable timber practices. Hostilities were still high following the death of David Chain, especially in the company-owned town of Scotia and the nearby town of Fortuna, where a former Maxim manager of Pacific Lumber was elected mayor. I want to read to you part of a recent op-ed piece by Joan Dunning, and she's an Arcata artist and author who wrote a book about the Redwood Summer Battles, among other books. And excerpts from this article I'll be reading appeared in the Eureka Times Standard and Eco News. And this will give you an example of the extreme hatred of certain individuals who supported clear-cutting of the redwoods. And here is an excerpt from that article. After David died, his mother, Cindy Albrooks, asked me to create a monument to David, which was to be paid for by Maxim Corporation. I agreed, but I warned her that the only monument which I thought could survive the vitriol of the times would have to be made of bronze. Fewer and fewer of us remember the violence that this county endured after the takeover of Pacific Lumber Company by Texas-based Maxim Corporation. It was a horrible, confusing era that divided Humboldt County in a way that is unimaginable in these more peaceful times. It was tough to have to warn Cindy that I believed her son might be the object of attack even after his death. And next, Joan described how a large bronze plaque she made was embedded in a large cut boulder and placed near the site of David's death, which was near Grizzly Redwood State Park. And then they had a memorial there, and within a week after the memorial, the plaque had been vandalized. The patina was ruined with egg, and a sledgehammer had been used in an attempt to smash in the face. The image had adequately withstood the attack due to the support of the epoxy and boulder behind it, and those who had been to visit the plaque in the first week had gathered the eggshells that were crushed and left them in a tiny pile as an offering to David, along with wildflowers, stones, and shells. But each year, when Cindy and her family returned to visit David, there was further damage. Finally, several years after its dedication, we found that a large hole had been drilled through David's forehead, and indelible red paint had been used for blood. Finally, Cindy broke down, and we realized that somehow the monument would have to find a new home. And eventually, a secret place was found in the woods for the monument that few people know about. And an update. In 2002, the district attorney, who refused to prosecute the logger, was defeated in an election after having served 20 years in office. The new DA sued Pacific Lumber for its timber practices. The company then funded an unsuccessful recall campaign against the new DA. The sheriff did not run for re-election and retired. So this memorial will be held this Sunday, September 16th, in Eureka at the historic Eagle House. For more information, go to yournec.org or just Google EcoNews. Admission is $25. Students are free. Besides Julia Butterfly Hill, Daryl Cherney, Joan Dunning, and other activists will be there. And this is a great way to honor the memory of David Gypsy Chain. Now, for another update on Redding Trails. Many of the City of Redding Trails and BLM Trails, as I reported last week, are now open. And according to information released Wednesday by Travis Menny of Redding Community Services, the North Sacramento River Trail is now open. So if you add all of these trails together, the West Side Trails, the Swayze Recreation Area, and the Mule Mountain Trails, there are still a lot of trails for people to hike and bike on. Now I'd like to talk about Made in the Shade. Made in the Shade is a film, actually a documentary, that was made by a group of Sacramento citizens in cooperation with the City of Sacramento. This film will be shown at 6:30 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church. And this film is a documentary of how a group of Sacramento citizens, in cooperation with the City of Sacramento and the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, over a period of about 35 years, planted almost 600,000 trees in an effort to provide more shade to the city and reduce the utility's peak electric demand from summer air conditioning, as well as to create an urban forest. At the same time, these trees remove perhaps as much as 200,000 tons of CO2 from the atmosphere, carbon which is now stored in the trees. As these trees grow, more CO2 will be fixed in the trees. The people who produce the film, All Tree Advocates, will be in Redding on September 21st to show this film and explain what they did about it. And to supplement this talk and make it more relevant to Redding, Travis Menny of Redding Community Services will explain how the City of Redding has already planted 1,200 trees last year, and they are doing 1,000 more this fall and 2,000 through 2019-20. He will also discuss a recent grant from CAL FIRE, which will allow the city to plant more street trees in downtown Redding. Time permitting, he will also discuss the city's re-oak program, which involves the planting of oak trees in areas where there was a severe burn from the car fire. Questions from the audience and a panel discussion will follow the film. This is sponsored by Shasta Environmental Alliance, Whole Earth and Watershed Festival, and KFOI Radio 90.9 FM. This event will be held at the First United Methodist Church. That's at East and South Street and starts at 6:30 p.m. For more information, email ecoshasta@gmail.com or go to our website, ecoshasta.org. Okay, I want to report on North State Rise for Climate. I announced that last week, and at the North State Rise for Climate, we had about 150 people show up for this event. And we had a great list of speakers and short videos. One impressive video presentation was by Chris Cooter of Channel 12. He's a meteorologist there. And he showed through a series of graphs how forest fires in California and the West have been increasing in amounts of area burned over the decades, and how temperatures have also been increasing. Then he showed a graph which showed that it isn't related to droughts. For example, during the period around 1976 to 77, that was a drought, a very severe drought. During those years, a very small amount of acreage burned. Several groups had tables set up displaying various issues related to climate change, and between the variety of different speakers, people learned a considerable amount about climate change from different perspectives. Another event coming up is the California Native Plant Society Fall Sale. And the Shasta Chapter of California Native Plant Society will be holding their 36th annual Fall Native Plant Sale at Shasta College, that's near the farms, at 9 a.m. Prices for these native plants are $7 for the 1 gallon size, and a member-only pre-sale with a $1 discount will be held Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. And it is open to CNPS members, but non-members can join on the spot and get the discount. For more information, go to ShastaCNPS.org. Okay, next up, we have Lamone Waite, who is the Master Gardener Coordinator for Shasta County UC Cooperative Extension. She is also an instructor at Shasta College, where she teaches classes on plant science, soil, and horticulture for the last 20 years out of a 25-year teaching career. Welcome to KFOI, Lamone.
Well, thank you.
Now, Lamone, I have a question here, and one of them is I understand that you and the Master Gardeners are concerned about people in the Redding area who are cutting down many trees around their homes and land following the Carr fire that might still be healthy.
Yes. Several of our Master Gardeners live out in the areas that were burned and either have lost a home or they have a home still, but others around them have lost homes. And they are reporting that as cleanup crews come in and clean up the lots, they're cutting down all of the trees as well. And that our biggest concern has been that a lot of the oaks may still be quite alive and just waiting to come back once we get some rains. And so I guess we want to get the message out that don't be so hasty in cutting down those oak trees unless, you know, they've really been compromised. And there's some things you can do to really evaluate if the tree truly is compromised and needs to be sawed down or if it may recover.
And what are those things that you look for?
So the things that you want to look for is if it's in an oak tree. Now, these aren't always going to be true for other types of trees because some trees have much thinner bark and are not adapted to the kind of fire ecology that the oaks are. But with an oak, if it's lost foliage but you don't really see a lot of damage on the trunk, it most likely will release and be quite fine. If it has only some spotty scorching, you know, around the base, but you've examined the cambium and that at least 30 or so percent of that looks good. And so the cambium layer is kind of the area inside of the bark where the active it's the active growth area. It's where the sugars move from the top of the tree down into the roots. And it should be a pink or kind of pale kind of white color. But if it looks more like caramel, you know, like it's been caramelized, then it's not healthy. So you can kind of tell by peeling a little bit of bark, a section of the bark back, and then, you know, put it back. It'll heal over again if the tree is still alive. And then, or if the tree is over 12 inches in diameter, so it's a pretty good size tree, even if it's scorched all the way around, but there's no reduction in the bark thickness, you know, it doesn't look like the bark has been burnt away, it may very well recover. The other part of that is you should look at the root system, because in some cases, the fire will go underground and it will burn the root system. And so you want to look around and make sure that there wasn't fire activity underground. So you could use a shovel or something just to kind of poke around and make sure that there aren't, you know, hollows underground. But otherwise, the tree may very well recover, and so it shouldn't be cut down right away. And really wait for next spring and before making that decision.
Okay. Now, I've noticed a lot of the fire pictures I see in the newspaper or on the internet that not only Santa Rosa but Redding, where the house is completely burned down, and the trees are still green. Now, should those trees be protected, or what should you do with those trees there?
So those trees, you should keep watering them. Most likely, those trees will recover. Even if there's a scorched spot, you know, on one side of them, trees are amazing in their ability to heal over. So as long as you're keeping them well watered and until the rains come, and fertilizing them in the spring. You know, don't fertilize them now as we're going into winter, but next spring, giving them a little extra love can make a big difference, and they can heal over a pretty substantial wound. Sometimes you may have to cut away the dead bark if you're seeing that it's hindering their ability to grow new bark back, but a lot of times trees can heal up from pretty major wounds.
Okay, now let's say now some of us, like, you know, may not, or some homeowners may not feel, gee, I can't really judge if this tree is, you know, going to make it or not. And
right.
Should you get like a certified arborist, or could you save some money and maybe get a tree faller, someone that's experienced with cutting down trees, to advise you?
I always recommend hiring an arborist, just because I know the training that they've had to go through. And, you know, they have to pass certifications in order to be an arborist, so hopefully they remember everything they were trained on. But, you know, that's not to say that someone that is, you know, an experienced horticulturist or tree faller or something might have that knowledge, but unless you personally, you know that person, I would be a little hesitant to recommend that. I always say to go with an arborist.
Okay. Now, what about... because there's a lot of ash and debris, you know, on the lots.
Exactly.
And when they scrape up that debris, are they going to damage the roots, or what precautions should they take?
Well, you know, I know that in a lot of places they're having to scrape the ash away because it may have contamination of stuff that was in the house or whatever. And so just if, you know, do try to avoid scraping the roots of the trees if possible. And if some of the roots become exposed, you know, make sure that they get covered back up with some soil or compost or something, so that they're not exposed for a long period of time.
Okay. And are there any, like, I've heard that, you know, trees are quite valuable to a property value. Are there any formulas or what knowledge do you have of the value of trees to a property? Let's just say resale value.
So trees definitely have can have a really large value, you know, large value, in fact, up to 30% of your property value. And it sort of depends on the tree type and its age and, you know, obviously how well it was cared for. And so there's no just one formula, but you can actually hire an arborist to actually calculate that. But trees can have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of value depending on the type of tree. You know, these couple hundred year old oak trees are quite valuable. You know, they're not going to replace that tree in our lifetime. And so those types of trees can be, have a lot of value. And so you don't want to have them cut down in a hurry if there's nothing wrong with the tree and it will recover.
Okay. And then I guess shade value, are there any estimates as to how much summer cooling costs there are, or do you have any comments on the?
So yeah, if you have a shade tree, and you know there's been a large variety of studies, but trees definitely have obviously a huge value to our community in a lot of ways. You know, they store carbon, they cool the area. In cities that have trees, they've actually estimated that the actual overall temperature of the city can be reduced by 15 to 20 degrees in the summertime. There are estimates that you can save up to 40% on your power costs of cooling if you have shade trees that shade your house and your air conditioning unit. So yeah, they have a huge savings, and you know, definitely have a huge value to our daily life. I mean, I could go on and on about
okay.
the value of trees, but yeah, there's a big value to trees, and
okay.
and just even into the overall fact that they produce oxygen and clean the air for us, and you know, they basically, plants and trees support all life on Earth, so they're vital to a community and to your area around your home.
Okay, now down in Sonoma and Napa County, there's kind of a re-oak program going on where the state California Native Plant Society has a program where they're growing, you know, oak trees that in areas that have been burned. And I know that the city of Redding has a kind of an exploratory program they're starting actually this year. What is your opinion on those? Should the oaks just grow naturally, or would it help to plant them?
So, I know chatting with the city of Redding earlier this week, and they're doing a re-oak Redding kind of campaign and encouraging people to collect acorns, and then I guess they drop them off at the library. they want people to include a leaf and, you know, make sure that the caps are still on the acorns and stuff, just so that they can kind of identify, you know, the variety of acorn.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things that I know they're planning to grow them in pots and then plant them out. And I don't know that that's the most successful way of growing oaks. I think they actually do better if you directly plant them into the ground. But I also understand that they're wanting to kind of control where things get planted and you know, plant when the time is right and so forth. And people really want to be involved, and it's hard to get people involved if you aren't, you know, if you can pot them up and then have people plant them later. There's a little bit more chance for people to volunteer and get involved with that. So, I mean, I understand their approach, but I think that on a whole, oaks do better being directly planted. And then there's a few things that I would be cautious about, though, because, one, you don't want to collect acorns typically off the ground because you could be spreading diseases that are in the ground, especially if you're getting oaks, say, from an urban area. There could be soil-borne diseases that you would be picking up that might be on the acorn that then you're introducing into a wild environment, especially if you're trying to just take those acorns out and plant them in a native space,
mm-hmm.
that disease wasn't there before. And so if you are collecting acorns, it's best to collect them off the tree. And you might laugh and go, well, how am I going to get it off the tree? But you can put a tarp down or a sheet or something and then use, you know, a long pole or a piece of PVC pipe or something and knock the acorns down. So you don't want them to touch the ground is the point.
Oh, okay.
And then usually the acorns that naturally fall, at least this time of year, also have had insect damage a lot of times. You know, they've had weevils or something eating them. And you'll see the little hole in the acorn. And if you put it in water, it'll float. So you want to avoid those. You want to get the healthy acorn. So usually picking them directly off the tree or knocking them down off the tree, you know, into something that protects them from the soil is best.
Okay.
And then you don't want to let them dry out. You know, you have to either put them in a Ziploc bag or something and actually put them in the refrigerator. And then I know the Native Plant Society is recommending that you actually give them a soak in some bleach water, 10% bleach solution before planting them, just to really make sure that you're not passing on diseases. So that's probably a good plan. And especially if you're going to store them for a while, I recommend that just to keep them from molding.
Okay. So the best thing would be to plant the acorn direct in the ground.
I think so, but you have to wait until the rains come because if you plant it now, it runs the risk of drying out.
Okay.
You know, the acorn is not real viable if it dries out, so you have to keep it. Have to have some way of keeping it from drying out. So if you're watering it, then you can plant it now and then water it. That's fine. But if you know you don't have the ability to water it, you need to wait for the winter rains to come. The other thing is making sure that you're identifying the right kind of acorn. There's a lot of we have a lot of acorns that are hybridized mm-hmm. or are some like on our campus. We have a lot of eastern oaks that aren't really native oak trees to our area, and so. Now, do make sure that the acorn that you're, if you are trying to plant it, in at least in a native area, you should be trying to plant a native oak, you know, one of our blue oaks or valley oak or wherever it is that you're, you know, trying to plant, matching that oak up with kind of its native habitat is best. And then, you know, making sure that the oak tree that you are introducing there isn't one of these, you know, eastern oaks or something, just because they don't do as well out in our native habitat.
Okay.
Plus, it could then contaminate the genetics of the other oaks, too.
Okay. Now, so summing up, and then just correct me if I'm wrong here, it's best to, I mean, I guess your first, maybe you could sum it up better than I could, you know, kind of a little step-by-step as to what to do if you've got trees that got maybe singed in your yard, excuse me, and then maybe just a summary of what you've just said.
Sure. So, you know, depending on the tree, it's, you know, if it's an oak tree, it has a much higher chance of surviving a fire than some of the other species of trees, but that's not to say that some of the other ones may recover as well. So inspecting the tree, looking at the tree overall, if it's just the leaves that have been singed off, and you don't see a lot of damage to the trunk or branches, then that tree may very well recover. It may just be waiting until next spring to do that, because we're going into the time of year that deciduous trees at least would be losing their leaves. And then, you know, if it's an oak tree, really looking at, you know, how much damage it has sustained, it can sustain quite a bit of damage and still re-sprout in the spring and continue to grow. I have a blue oak in my yard that obviously went through a fire, you know, many years ago, and it's quite healthy still today. So, but a portion of the trunk is damaged, but that doesn't seem to have stopped it any from being a healthy and safe tree to have in your yard. If, you know, one or two branches has been damaged, those could be removed as long as it's not vital to the whole tree structure, and it may be that the rest of the tree is fine.
Okay.
Inspecting the area around the tree to make sure the roots haven't been burned. You know, sometimes the fire does go underground, and so, you know, making sure that that is not damaged. And then if there is some damage to the trunk, actually peeling the bark back and looking to see what the cambium looks like. If it looks pink or kind of a pale white or tan color, then it's probably fine. If it looks more caramelized, so it's a darker tan or almost a brown color, then it may have received too much fire damage, got too hot.
Okay.
But, you know, those are the sorts of things. And then if it's a really big oak, even if it's gotten some fairly bad scorching on its trunk or around, as long as it didn't burn the bark off, you know, the bark hasn't been reduced, it can be scorched, but if it's not, you know, the actual overall depth of the bark hasn't been reduced, it may very well recover, because that bark is a pretty good insulating layer.
Okay. Well, now, I want to thank you, Lamone. I think you have covered just about everything we need to know about saving your trees. And once again, this is KFOI Radio and Shasta Environmental Alliance program. And my guest has been Lamone Waite. Once again, she's an instructor at Shasta College for the last 20 years, a full-time instructor. And she is a Master Gardener Coordinator for the Shasta County UC Cooperative Extension. So she is quite knowledgeable about this subject. So thank you very much, Lamone.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I hope the word gets out to folks. And I really don't want people to be too hasty in cutting their trees down. If they can be saved, by all means, do so.
Okay, me too. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.
I'm David Ledger, and this has been KFOI Radio's Shasta Environmental Alliance program, and we are on the air every Friday at 1 p.m., and we thank you for listening. Remember, if you go to our website at kfoiradio.org, there is a donate button. We are a nonprofit, and we can always use your support. Thank you very much.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, bah, 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 bah.